With Steve Scherer, I'm Ross Reynolds. You are listening to The Record on KUOW. By now, you've probably heard of Bitcoin, the virtual currency, although you might still be a little foggy about what it is. Now there are reports that as much as 6% of the Bitcoins in circulation are missing, and the world's largest Bitcoin exchange, Mt. Gox, has gone dark. This is fueling speculation about the future of Bitcoin.
And this after Bitcoin seemed to be taking hold. The University of Puget Sound just received a $10,000 gift from an alumni in Bitcoin. And at the end of this month, Seattle was scheduled to be one of two cities in the U.S. to have ATM machines for Bitcoins.
Forbes reporter Kashmir Hill ditched her cash and credit cards and tried to spend a whole week living only on Bitcoin just to figure out how the currency works and whether she could do it. She wrote an e-book called Secret Money, Living on Bitcoin in the Real World. She says the situation with the latest news is not as dire as it seems. In fact, she says no one in the Bitcoin community is really surprised by Mt. Gox's collapse.
It was known to be a troubled exchange. It was the first one there. Mt. Gox, it stands for Magic, the Gathering Online Exchange, because the exchange started out as a place to trade magic cards.
Yeah, that's where I want my money.
And they started moving into virtual currency very early on when it was worth pennies. Huh. And it's just, you know, first arriver, it became the biggest, but it's always been a questionable exchange. So many people in the Bitcoin community weren't especially surprised when we found out that essentially this Bitcoin bank got robbed.
Could there be some good that could come out of this failure of this one particular Bitcoin dealer?
A lot of people are kind of excited to see Mt. Gox exit the scene because it was this kind of unprofessional exchange. The CEO, Mark Karpeles, famously did an interview with Reuters where he was sitting on a bouncy ball and bouncing his way through the interview. And I think a lot of people don't want those kinds of people as the face of Bitcoin. They want, you know, Mark Andreessen and venture capitalists that are starting to get in and professionalize Bitcoin. And so there are certainly some players in this market who are excited to see the Mt. Gox chapter of Bitcoin come to an end.
How serious are these problems for Bitcoins overall?
The thing about Bitcoin is it's a decentralized virtual currency. So if Mt. Gox were the bank that issued Bitcoin, this would be a huge problem. But it is a kind of decentralized monetary system, and there are a lot of other players in the market now. And there are a lot of other exchanges. We don't actually have a Bitcoin exchange yet, a big one in the U.S., but we found out this week that Second Market, which was famous for trading Facebook shares and Twitter shares before they went public, is going to launch a Bitcoin exchange in the U.S. So it kind of feels like Bitcoin is going to route around this disaster.
Forbes reporter Kashmir Hill is with us. All of us have heard of Bitcoin, but we're still a little foggy about what Bitcoin is. So I want you to help enlighten us. For example, can you flip a Bitcoin and call heads or tails?
You can't. There are these novelty Bitcoins that you'll see in photos around Bitcoin stories. And so people start to think that that is a Bitcoin. But it is just a novelty item on which a Bitcoin code has been printed in the private key to unlock that bit of value. Bitcoin, I think the best way to think about it is as a huge public ledger. And what's happening is that anybody who enters the Bitcoin system, buys Bitcoin, gets value in that ledger. And that really is just what Bitcoin is. It's moving value from here to here on ledger entries. It's not an actual physical thing.
The real coins in my pocket are worth a nickel and they're worth a quarter. What's a Bitcoin worth?
This is one of the big problems with Bitcoin. It's very volatile. When I was living on Bitcoin last year, the price was between $90 and $140. Bitcoin now is worth $500. In November, Bitcoin was worth $1,200. So the value is moving around all the time. And it's determined by the market, how much people are willing to pay for it.
You know, that makes me think that it sounds more like a speculative investment than a currency you would use.
It does feel a bit like the stock market these days. And that is something that a lot of countries are trying to decide. How do we treat this thing? Is it a foreign currency? Is it like a share or stock? And so in terms of people that are investing in it and making money or losing money, they are expected in the U.S. to pay capital gains tax if they bought Bitcoin at $13 last year and then they sold it for $1,200. The true value or benefit of Bitcoin is the ability to move money from one place to another without paying transaction fees or paying very low transaction fees. So from that perspective, it kind of doesn't matter what the value is. It just matters that it's easy to change it into US dollars here and easy to change it into RMB if you're sending it to China. The other stuff is kind of speculative and it's kind of a sideshow around Bitcoin.
So it's easier to move and it's cheaper in that way to move than other ways of spending money. Is it more private to use Bitcoin?
So it's private if you don't attach your identity to your Bitcoin address. Bitcoin is a huge public ledger where you can see every single entry and the movement of Bitcoin from one place to another. It's the security of the system. It's kind of massive surveillance. And that's so that you can't just introduce new Bitcoin into the system and claim, oh yeah, I have 10 Bitcoin. You actually can see that Bitcoin created and you see its movement. So in that way, it's not very public. It's totally transparent. But the benefit of it is that if you don't attach it to your identity in some way, all you can see is value moving around and you don't know why people are sending that money or who's holding it. Except when I was living on Bitcoin for a week, you know, I publicly tied myself to my Bitcoin. We call it a Bitcoin wallet or my Bitcoin address. And so you could see every time I spent money or every time I received money. So once you actually attach yourself to that address, it's not very private at all.
So how did that work out? You ditched cash, as I understand it. You ditched credit cards and you tried to live just by using Bitcoins. How did that go?
It was difficult. The big things I had to think about were food, you know, shelter and transportation. There is a sushi restaurant and a cupcake place that take Bitcoin in San Francisco. But if that's all I ate all week, I would probably have gained weight and gotten mercury poisoning. So I did find out that a food delivery service called Foodler had started accepting Bitcoin just a couple of weeks before my experiment. So it opened up a bunch of restaurants for me. But I couldn't find a car service that would take Bitcoin. The BART, which is the train here that I usually take to commute to work, didn't take Bitcoin. So I had to, I ended up able to rent a bike for a quarter of a Bitcoin for the week. But I did lose 5 pounds just in a week. I thought about calling my ebook The Bitcoin Diet because I was walking everywhere or riding my bike everywhere. And it was hard to get food. You know, I just couldn't like swing into a Starbucks.
You did this as an experiment to sort of see what it would be like to do it. What do you think week two, week three, week four would have been like? Is it something one can practically do for longer than a week?
I probably could have continued to do it. It would have been challenging. And the irony of the week is that I was trying to live on something that's been called the currency of the internet, the future of currency. But I felt like I've been thrown back into kind of an earlier era or the dark ages because I had to get around on my bike. I had to move out of my nice apartment and into a hostel that was still under construction. So in that way, it was very difficult. And I enjoyed the challenge, but I was very happy when I was able to use legal tender and credit cards again.
Kashmir, I've got a $20 bill. It says on it Federal Reserve Note of the United States of America. So I take that to mean that the U.S. government stands behind this currency. Who or what stands behind Bitcoin?
So this is what terrifies people about Bitcoin. There isn't a centralized bank that will guarantee the value of it. This is why libertarians love it. It is a free market currency, and the value is based on what the market values it at, what people are willing to pay for it. And what you can get for it. So you could take, you know, your $20 worth of Bitcoin to Overstock and then buy something for it. So as more and more merchants enter the market, I think it may help to stabilize the value of Bitcoin.
So you think Bitcoin is around to stay?
I think Bitcoin or something like it, a virtual currency, will be here to stay. And I don't know that Bitcoin will be the winner. You know, when I started living on Bitcoin for a week, it really was a lark. And I thought Bitcoin was crazy. This currency that somebody, we don't even know who he is, Satoshi Nakamoto, pseudonym for somebody who maybe lived in Japan or maybe somewhere else, that he created this currency 5 years ago and now it's worth hundreds of dollars. It has, you know, $1 billion market cap. It just seemed insane to me. But by the end of the week, I did see the virtue of being able to make payments online that aren't attached to your identity if you're good about your security around your Bitcoin and being able to send value from one place to another with low transaction fees instead of a $20 wire transfer fee or an $80 fee. And I do think that there are benefits to virtual currencies, and I think that one will catch on and be adopted.
That's Kashmir Hill, a reporter for Forbes magazine in San Francisco. She covers Bitcoin. Her ebook is called Secret Money, Living on Bitcoin in the Real World.
How is it different from PayPal, what PayPal offers me as a service?
I think you put money into PayPal. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to have her back on to explain that.
It still seems
like
still
a little foggy about the whole thing.
Yeah. It seems like I can see how libertarians would like it in that it can be so ill-defined.
I'm holding on to my Ben Franklins for now, I'll tell you that. This is The Record on KUOW with Steve Scheer. I'm Ross Reynolds.